to discuss developments here in Ukraine and in Moscow. Joining us now is Donika O'Bakoin. He's Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in Dublin City University. Can we start with what's happening here today? I've heard several people wondering why Vladimir Zelensky is in Ireland. You know, they've said basically, what use are we to him? Why is he here?
Well, this meeting, this visit would have been in gestation for some weeks, some months. So it's a coincidence that it coincides with a real crescendo, indeed a peak in the negotiation process with Steve Witkoff in Moscow. He will be here to send a message not just to Ireland. Ireland is, in that respect, a platform for amplifying the message to the world. People are interested to hear what Zelensky has to say every day. He addresses his own people every evening when he's in Ukraine. So this is an international audience. It's a European audience. Ireland, of course, hosts the EU presidency next year. So Ireland is an ardent supporter, indeed probably the most ardent supporter in Brussels in terms of promoting Ukraine's EU aspirations. Should add as well that it's not his first time in Ireland, it's first state visit in Ireland. He was here in 2017 when he was in his previous life as a performer, performed in Drogheda, spent 5 days here, made his way down to our own native County Clare, visited the Cliffs of Moher, indeed made it to Áras an Uachtaráin as a visitor. This time, of course, today he's going as a head of state, but he has been before, and he always had very affectionate memories about Ireland. And I think he knows that he's speaking to a warm, sympathetic audience, and I think he needs that right now. Certainly he wouldn't get that necessarily in the Oval Office were he to go there today.
Mm-hmm. And he's also speaking in a country where an awful lot of his compatriots are living at the moment, and we'll be hearing from two of those later in the programme. But on social media this morning, he was talking about the broader picture, and he said a framework peace agreement had been refined. So what's known about where those negotiations stand now?
It's quite opaque. Let's face it, this 28-point peace plan that was negotiated between Steve Witkoff and Kirill Dmitriev, who I should hasten to add are not diplomats. These are billionaires who have the confidence of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, respectively. And of course, they negotiated this without Ukraine in the room, without Europe in the room. This was, in many respects, reflecting the Kremlin wish list. It was talking about Ukraine handing back territory to Russia, not handing back, of course, but handing over territory. Russia claims, of course, 5 major regions of Ukraine in its constitution and wants them back diplomatically or militarily, Putin has made it clear. So the territory issue, we don't know what's happened with that, and we don't know what's happened with security. Security is the other big issue, because even if Ukraine were to countenance handing over territory temporarily and, of course, not recognizing Russia's right to that territory, there is the question of what would prevent Russia from reinvading. This is the second major invasion in 11 years, 2014 being the first, 2022 being the next. So that's the key. These are the key sticking points. When you say, yes, it's been refined, we haven't seen a published document of the refined version. It's very fluid.
He also, on social media this morning, accused Russia of launching a disinformation campaign. Now, presumably he was talking about what's happening in Pokrovsk. Can you tell us about the significance of Pokrovsk?
So Pokrovsk is an important strategic hub. It was, before the Russian full-scale invasion, a city of about 75,000 people. No one lives there now. I mean, this is what Russia's so-called liberation happened, you know, what it means when they invade. Everybody has fled. So they're fighting over, essentially, the shell of a city. It is... if it were to be captured by Russia, it would open the rail and the road routes to Kramatorsk and Sloviansk, which are heavily fortified cities. So it is not without significance. However, going back to what you were saying about Zelensky's accusation that this is part of a misinformation campaign, Russia has been trying to capture this particular city since the summer of last year. And they have claimed many times to have captured it. So there is a suspicion that they're claiming it again because they want to apply pressure on Ukraine as Witkoff arrives in Moscow, and to give this impression that Ukraine should surrender now because the momentum is with Russia. And if they don't surrender now, they'll just simply make it a slower, longer, and more brutal war.
As you say, this battle in and around Pokrovsk has been continuing for well over a year. And reading about it earlier, I mean, there's so much that we don't know. For instance, we don't know how many casualties there have been, but it's believed that an incredible number of soldiers on both sides have lost their lives there.
That's true. And overall, I mean, it's estimated that Russia has had more than 1 million casualties since its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Ukraine has lost considerably less for a variety of reasons. Usually they're better trained, but also they're usually in a defensive position. You usually need three times as many soldiers to attack a fortified position. But the casualties are just outrageously high. And Russia has had to really dig deep, even though it has a much larger population. It's had to empty its prisons, giving amnesties to criminals to fight in Ukraine. It's drawn up its ethnic minorities. It's brought in North Koreans. Don't forget that tens of thousands of North Koreans were fought to fight for Russia. And citizens of Cuba, Kenya, South Africa, their governments are saying, why are our citizens being solicited online with promises of money to fight in Ukraine? So this is not a regional war. This is really a global war in many respects.
Just finally on this, what are you expecting from these talks in Moscow today?
I have to say I'm expecting very little. Steve Witkoff, I mean, his allegiances are well known. He said in an interview with Tucker Carlson that he was an admirer of Vladimir Putin. He likes Vladimir Putin. And I think many women would love their spouse to look at them in the way that Steve Witkoff looks at Vladimir Putin. I mean, he hasn't in any way tried to put pressure on Russia. So it's seen that he will listen to what Russia has to say, what Putin has to say, and then he will pass that back as kind of a red line of what Ukraine needs to do. We have been here before, remember. Remember in March, it was Donald Trump who asked for a ceasefire. Ukraine agreed. Russia did not. We had those talks in Istanbul that went nowhere. There was the summit in Alaska in August. When Vladimir Putin was brought to the United States, again, there was a lot of hysteria and hype about a meeting between Zelensky and Putin, which never happened. So there is a certain circular, you know, motion to this. Donald Trump has been zigzagging towards the exit door now for over a year. He's made it clear that from an American perspective, they're no longer supporting Ukraine. They're no longer supplying Ukraine with arms, and they see Russia as the big prize. They'd love to have a business agreement with Russia. Ukraine, from that perspective, is an inconvenience. So I suspect that he'll come back from Russia saying, I've listened to Putin. This is what he wants. Ukraine, now it's up to you to fulfill Russia's wish list.
Professor Donica O'Bakoin of DCU, thanks indeed for being with us this afternoon.